Hello, everybody, and welcome to the You Should Run podcast. I am Tony Heil, council member in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania. If you've listened to me, you know, I talk to guests from every state, from Maine to Hawaii, Florida to Alaska, and all points in between. But what I talk to people about running for office, and I've talked to people who've run for school board all the way up to U.S. Senate and most points in between. And it really takes a whole team to get elected. That includes people who are campaign managers, direct mail, field organizers, etc. And in 2024, especially every year, I guess, organizing in colleges is super important. And the youth vote very different this year, with issues ranging from social media to housing, healthcare, LGBT rights, education, etc. There's a lot of issues, and there's a lot of politicians who don't seem to get it or are confused as to what to talk about. And maybe the youth vote's just like every other vote. I'm going back to North Carolina today to talk to my new friend, hopefully we'll be friends, Brandon Teague. He is organizing young voters in North Carolina, where there are a lot of extremely important races, including to stop potentially the worst Republican running for office in the country. So we're going to talk about that and hopefully inspire you to get out there and organize throughout 2024. So Brandon, thanks for talking today.
Thanks for having me on.
So you're in North Carolina, you're active in politics. It's 2024. When did you first care about politics enough to do something other than just, you know, read or vote?
Yeah. So, I mean, I really got interested in politics after January the 6th. I remember sitting in my living room with my parents, watching it on TV, and I'm like, this is not what government is supposed to look like. This is just some extreme kind of event that's happening, and this isn't what the American society is supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. So originally I was going to college to go into theology, and I'm like, nope, we're going into government and political science. So 2022 rolls around, and I just got involved making phone calls, postcards, and just doing what I could do to make a difference.
And you're in North Carolina. What part of North Carolina are you in? Like, what is your area like?
Yeah, so I am in rural western North Carolina. This is probably one of the most conservative parts of the state. Out of the eight counties out here, there's only two liberal-leaning counties in all of the 9 to 10 counties out here.
And so once you're watching that, what did you decide you wanted to do? Like, what did you want to accomplish after being inspired or angry about the events of January 6th?
I really just wanted to make sure that I had a future, and then my kids will have a future, that one day that they can go and they can say, hey, this is the America that we've heard about. This is the America that has inspired so many people to come here, and not to be this place that turns off everybody from coming.
And you talk about you're in a more conservative part of North Carolina, and it's a state that has traditionally voted conservatively, voted for Republicans, but it's been close in elections. When you talk about January 6th being motivating for you as a young person, what about the people around you? Do they all... Do you find people feel similarly? Do you feel like, you're a stranger in the land because it seems so crazy and yet people support it? Like, how do you see your community after that effect, after that incident?
Yes, I mean, the community that I am in now, which is my college town, I mean, it's a very pretty bipartisan that it was a horrible event. I mean, we've started kind of an organization called Champions for Democracy. And I mean, to really bring the values that Americans hold dear. And, you know, every anniversary, we've had this January the 6th rally outside the local courthouse, just reminding people what happened and why that doesn't need to happen again and how that could happen under a second administration of Trump.
And when you're saying that, like, do people in your area, do they feel like those, that rhetoric, that discussion about the threats of democracy, how do people respond to that? Because there's a lot of that from the Biden campaign. There's a lot of that from other Democrats. And maybe voters dismiss it. Like, well, we've continued to be able to vote. I don't know what you're talking about. Do people take it seriously, or do people not take it seriously?
I think people have taken it seriously out here. I mean, I've heard from, you know, not only from Democrats, but from Republicans and, you know, independents as well, as, you know, what happened was scary and, you know, they don't want that to happen again. So, you know, they will basically vote for somebody else if it means stopping something like that from happening again. So it is really kind of a community building thing out here, since we are such a small, well-knit town.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked, I've seen a lot in social media about how young voters say, yeah, Democrats say that they need to protect democracy, but what are they doing with it? They feel like maybe they're not being heard enough. So as you talk, you're doing college organizing, right? When you talk to young voters, is that something that motivates them, or is it falling on deaf ears?
That issue has really fallen to deaf ears, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It was relevant back in 2022, but I think there are some more concerning issues that young voters are really looking at this cycle, and especially here in North Carolina.
So what have you been doing to talk with younger voters, and what have you learned that you think that other Democrats should pay attention to and address when it comes to caring about the issues of younger voters?
Yeah, so the main thing that I've done and my friends have done with me is we've just shown up. We've shown up to sporting events. We've showed up to Greek life events across our campus. And just hearing what students have to say, you know, we've been told that, you know, we're horrible people for believing what we believe in. But we've had genuine conversations. And I think a lesson that, you know, the Biden-Harris campaign and Democrats everywhere is just showing up. Mm-hmm. You know, we feel like we get left out at the discussion table a lot of times with policy decisions and just having our voices heard. So just having Democrats show up and listen is the biggest thing that I think we can take in to this cycle.
And it seems like a lot of the issues that younger voters have, I sympathize with. You got housing costs, healthcare, et cetera. But a lot of those things either have been addressed somewhat recently, or the impact of that legislation won't take place for a while. Like, you know, when it comes to, they could pass a healthcare bill for universal healthcare, but it won't be implemented for years, right? Because the way legislation takes, do you think that voters aren't patient enough for legislation to work? Sometimes, because, you know, the Affordable Care Act was massive, and people now who are just voting for the first time, they have no concept of the change that made, because they don't know the difference from before 2010.
I don't think it's a patience thing. I think it's they're just not educated on the legislation that's already out there. You know, yes, young people, they've heard of the Affordable Care Act. But I don't think in reality they really know what the Affordable Care Act has really done for them. So it kind of just makes it seem like, yeah, there's this piece of legislation, but what has it actually done for me? So I think a lot of it is really just an education thing and not being up to, you know, what legislation is actually doing.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think would be beneficial for, like, the Biden campaign, Josh Stein and others, when reaching out to these voters? Is it worth their time? Because I see a lot of things where people online, on TikTok and otherwise, they'll say, you know what, I'm not even going to vote. It's not good enough for me. And if I'm a candidate, which I've been, I'm going to appeal to people who are going to vote. I talked to my neighbor today. He votes all the time. His main concern is traffic on the street. Well, I'm going to pay attention to him because I know he votes. If you come out and say, I want you to do this very complicated thing or I'm not going to vote and I never do, well, you're not worth my time, right? Like, so what would your recommendation be to, in terms of how much investment to give to this community?
Yeah, and to answer that question, I always look to Congressman Jeff Jackson. Mm-hmm. He represents North Carolina here, and how he can just sit down in front of the camera and just explain, you know, what's happening in the House. I think it's going to take something like that to really get this generation engaged in voting. And you know, we've really got to make sure that young people and all generations really understand what's happening. And like I said, Jeff Jackson can do that. And I think that's why he will be North Carolina's next attorney general, because he will engage with, yes, the generations that vote consistently, but he's also going to put time and money on our college campuses and making sure that he has those votes to beat his Republican opponent in November.
So I'm really interested in North Carolina because I have family there. I also think North Carolina politics are pretty interesting in general. Not that other states aren't, but people make a joke about North Carolina where you could have like someone who is going to come and run over all of your puppies and take away every person's rights, and they'll get 50.0001% of the vote, and the other person who promised you that they will solve every problem will get 49.99%. Like, it's so close, and the differences are so stark. But what are the stakes in this election for young people, especially in North Carolina, and that you see as a person who's organizing with young people in the state?
Yeah, so, I mean, the effects of the Dobbs decision, you know, I have ladies on my college campus that are concerned that if something happened that they cannot get a safe abortion here in the state. And I mean, Mark Robertson, who is the nominee for governor here, has said that he wants to ban all abortion in the cases of rape, incest, and even the life of the mother. So you can't take an extreme person like him, who, like you said, would run over all the puppies, and give him the chance to become the next governor. And then also, you know, we had a shooting at UNC Chapel Hill, which is here in the state. Gun violence and gun safety is on the minds of many young people. I mean, we've rallied in the General Assembly that this assembly would pass common sense gun legislation. And we were basically shooed and told to leave the gallery while the House was in session. Mm-hmm. So, you know, making sure that we're protected while we're getting this education. And on the topic of public education, the Republicans here in North Carolina have nominated this extreme MAGA candidate who has called for, you know, the execution of President Obama and like Bill Gates and, you know, figures like that to basically run the public schools here in North Carolina. She's never been in public schools. She's a homeschooled mom. She homeschools all of her children. And as somebody that's been in public education and that's needed public education, I don't want somebody like her running my children's education, because I know that she will destroy the public institutions here in the state.
I think that you and I understand the threat that some of these candidates have. But do you think it's that people just don't understand that real threat, that maybe this, because we're saying, you know, these people are extremely dangerous. But how do you get people to understand just how serious that is? Because I think sometimes people think, well, that's politics, and they tune out. Are you getting through to people about how serious those threats are?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to some of my conservative friends. That, you know, they understand what public education has done for them. And like, they've seen this candidate say this stuff from her own mouth. You know, it's not just the Democrats saying it. Mm-hmm. She's said this stuff herself. You know, there's this long line of tweets and, you know, things that we can show that this isn't just some fairy tale that Democrats are cooking up to win this election. It's this person telling us these things with her own mouth. So I think using their own words against them will get voters that are undecided, especially in these down ballot races like superintendent of public instruction.
You know, it's interesting watching North Carolina too, because North Carolina has elected some rather, you know, middle of the road or at least sensible Republicans. I might not vote for them, but like Senator Tom Tillis, he seems like a reasonable person. I don't agree with his policies or politics, but he is grounded in the real world at the very least, right? I think that we can agree that maybe we wouldn't vote for him. He's not our cup of tea, but I wouldn't be like scared out of my mind by hearing him speak. And yet now their party is nominating people like Mark Robinson, like this woman for education who has literally posted death threats. From your knowledge of the area where you live in, is this just a direction of that party where if you're going to be the only be way you can be nominated is really to be very, very wild and crazy.
Yeah, I mean, in my county of Jackson County, the county Republican Party, they were moderate people. I mean, we would host events with them, the Republicans and the Democratic Party. And then at the beginning of 2020, the MAGAs just moved into the county and kind of overthrew the county Republican Party. So, yes, I mean, these are the types of people that North Carolina Republicans want now.
And, you know, you talk to some conservative-minded people, you said. You're not in Durham, right? Like, nothing against Durham. That's where my family lives. It's a great place. But, you know, you talk to people. Do you think that the average person actually wants these kind of people running their government? Or it's just that the people who are active in the primaries and the people who are willing to run, like, it's a selection process problem?
I don't think these candidates speak for the vast majority of North Carolinians.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got your people that are dedicated voters and will vote in every primary and general election. But to, you know, your voters that stayed at home because they didn't know what candidates were on the primary ballots. And now these people are like, I'm not voting for people like Mark Robertson. I'm not voting for Dan Bishop for Attorney General just because of how extreme they are. And I will admit, Republicans had some moderate options for this cycle. But they chose to take the most MAGA and the most extreme Republicans to take to the general election.
So do you think that's going to cost them then, like, that there's enough moderate Republican people and independents who are going to be so put off by that that they're willing to switch their vote?
Yeah, I mean, in North Carolina, independents make the vast majority of the electorate here in North Carolina. So, and I expect all campaigns to be really taking their message to these independent voters, because that's where the elections will be decided. I mean, Biden lost the state by a little over a point in 2020. It's a battleground state. I know the Biden campaign has invested money now. He was just in town yesterday. So, yeah, I think it's going to be messaging that's really going to focus on these campaigns, and it's going to be, can the candidates get the higher percentage of vote turnout in the counties that they need them?
And I've seen your governor, Cooper. I think he's a really great governor because he just seems like a sensible, get things done type of governor, from my experience here a few states away. But he said that he sees that the Biden campaign is already more active and energized in North Carolina than they were 4 years ago. Now, granted, it was a much different time in 2020, so that may be part of it. But do you see a difference in terms of the energy of what the Democrats are doing? You have a great party chair now who's younger. It seems like there is a different trend for the motivation and energy with Democrats in North Carolina than there has been in quite some time.
Yeah, and I think Democrats are energized in North Carolina because we've seen what our Republican supermajority legislature has done while they've had this power, and that's made us mobilize. You know, we have the youngest state party chair in the country. She has good messaging, not only for young people, but for rural people, and when a vast majority of North Carolina is rural counties, it's going to take, you know, an extra 4 or 5 votes in every rural precinct to put these candidates over the threshold to win. And like, I know with my work with the Young Dems of North Carolina, as well as the College Dems, we're ready to put in the work that we need to. You know, we have 22 active college chapters here in the state. And as the membership director of the College Dems of NC, it's my job to make sure that every chapter has the resources to grow membership. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm working on personally. So Democrats are organized and energized in North Carolina right now.
Yeah, Anderson Clayton, the party chair, she seems like she's bringing a different kind of energy to the party that we don't see in other states even. And from what I've talked to with, when I talked to Darren Staley, what I've talked with Julie Van Heffern, I'm pronouncing her name wrong, I'm sorry, because I'm talking fast. When I talked to people in North Carolina, they seemed really happy about her leadership as a young person doing things. One thing it does remind me of when I look at some of the things going on with online discussions, though, is kind of this liberal Puritanism that I saw someone talk about recently, where, like, if you are, it's, and this is true in a lot of younger, more maybe in college areas, where you have to check off that you agree on like 20 different issues, and you can't get people to agree on pizza toppings a lot of the time. So to get people to agree on every major issue, from healthcare to foreign policy, it's not easy to do. Is that something that you see happening now with college voters and young voters, or do you think that it's more open mind, open tent, and you're going to be more welcoming than just having to check off every single box to be included in the club?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it really is a big tent scenario. I mean, there are Democrats that I disagree with. You know, we don't see eye to eye on foreign policy or the economy, but I know at the end of the day that we are Democrats and that we have the best interest going forward. And, you know, we can put our policy and all of our other differences to reach the common goal that we know we need to accomplish.
Well, great. So it's March, soon to be April 2024, or kind of early in the process. It seems like, at least recently, now that the parties have pretty much formally picked their nominees, like now it's baked in that it's going to be Biden versus Trump again, which you and I knew was going to happen months ago, but maybe voters didn't realize. What do you think it's going to take to win in North Carolina this year? What do you see is happening in the election going forward?
Yeah, so I mean, if the Biden-Harris campaign wants to win North Carolina, they're going to have to max out voter turnout in Durham, in the Mecklenburg area, in the Buncombe, Asheville area, and then, you know, just picking away at some of these more flippable counties like Jackson County and some of the counties out east, because these are the counties that are going to make the difference. Even if it doesn't carry President Biden, they'll carry the down ballot candidates.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking in rural areas too. How important it is to win in those margins where maybe the county you talk about went 70-30 Trump to Biden, or even 80-20, but if you can switch it from 80-20 to 70-30, that's a decent chunk of votes, especially when Trump barely won the state.
Yeah, and I mean, in Jackson County where I am, Obama carried it in 08, and that was the last time that a Democrat had ever carried North Carolina. He lost it in 2012, and it's gotten slightly more conservative, but there's a voting block in this county now that sees the Republican Party as the party that they no longer can associate with. So getting those people, even if they don't vote for Biden, not to vote for Trump and other Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing we do need to talk about that you brought up is the issue of the supermajority or supermajority in the North Carolina legislature. I've talked with a few people in the North Carolina legislature on my podcast. It's a very frustrating time to be a Democrat in a lot of state governments, especially North Carolina. What's the impact of the way that the legislature is now? Especially for younger people, what kind of impact is it having on policy in North Carolina?
Yeah, so I mean, just to give a little overview, you know, coming out of the 2022 midterms, North Carolina Republicans had a supermajority in the state Senate, and they were one seat away from the having a supermajority in the state House. Well, we had a Democrat from Mecklenburg that decided that she was going to switch to the Republican Party, basically throwing Governor Cooper's veto out the window. And with this new veto-proof supermajority, they've passed an extreme abortion ban. They've given school vouchers to all these private and charter schools in the state while neglecting the public schools that are deteriorating and are just falling apart. They've just taken away any common sense gun legislation. They've made it easier to carry a gun. They've made it easier to purchase a gun. And in the state budget that they passed, their emails and records are now private. Mm-hmm. And that lacks transparency in government. And it makes it harder to trust the people that are supposed to have your best interest.
And so why do you think that Democrats have a chance at making inroads into that, into getting back the majority? What do you think it's going to take for Democrats to win on a legislative level?
Yeah, so, you know, Republicans gerrymandered the state Senate and state House maps, but there is still a way for us to come out of the super minority. You know, we've got several highly competitive seats in the Asheville area, and also running candidates for the General Assembly, even in, like, the red rural areas, because that still helps. And just making sure that when we go to the ballot, that we know what our candidates are standing for. Mm-hmm. I know when we had our primaries, we had some more centrist Democrats that lost their primaries to more progressive. And these were votes that we needed when we were still in the minority, but still had a veto. So making sure that these are true Democrats. And with the work that I'm doing with the college Dems, we are starting a program to where we are going to be helping General Assembly candidates in college districts. So making sure that those candidates are working with our college students, because these are all flippable districts in these college areas. It's just going to take college engagement and college turnout.
Yeah, you mentioned Jeff Jackson, the congressman who's running for attorney general now, because of the redistricting that they did. And I think he did a video where he said, I don't want Republicans to accuse me of X, Y, Z, me being too liberal on something or this and that. And I think they're going to call you that anyway, right? That's what Pete Buttigieg said when he was running for president in 2020 is, it doesn't matter how liberal or conservative a Democrat is, they're going to call you socialist if you say that we should just get 5% cheaper healthcare. Like, that's it's crazy. So, you know, young people, they need a motivation to vote. Is it important, do you think, that it's better for Democrats to kind of have a more progressive candidate because Republicans are going to call you these things anyway, and maybe you could be inspiring some new voters to come out?
I would say that progressive candidates are only needed in seats that we know we can win. I wouldn't want to run a super progressive candidate out here in rural Western North Carolina. I mean, because it's a seat that I know that we can flip. And if we had somebody with progressive ideology, I think it would hurt us with Republican and independent voters that we need to flip this House seat.
Well, do you think that maybe it doesn't depend so much about Democrat versus R, but they're going to maybe just in terms of certain issues or how you talk about things that will bring up, because I don't know what level you become conservative or what level you become progressive on the scale, right? It's not like one day you're on a 1 to 100 scale, and if you get to 51, well, now you're a liberal. If you get to 49, you're conservative, or if it's when you're at 80 or 20. Like, it's weird how you're called things in politics like that. So what kind of things do you think would be important for a Democrat running, especially for the legislature, to get people to care about it?
Yeah, I mean, focusing on public education. I mm-hmm. mean, North Carolina is known for its public institutes within the UNC system. So, you know, putting public education and how you're going to better public education at the forefront of your campaign. Focusing on the economy and making sure that the state economy is continuing to grow, you know, small businesses. Ensuring that when we come out of college into the workforce, that the economy in the state is ready for us. And, you know, we don't have to be out here campaigning on abortion or, you know, some extreme foreign policy. Hitting the policies that matter to North Carolinians, and that's education, that's the economy, and that's safety and freedom.
And I think that it seems like being pro-choice in general is winning for Democrats everywhere. But in terms of foreign policy, I don't really see why that's an impact on state legislative races, right? Like, I love my state rep. He's a friend. And I don't disagree with him on basically anything. Most of the time, he's more progressive than me. But when I go to vote for him, I don't care his thoughts about any foreign policy matter because it's about the legislature. So it's the message discipline is important on those kind of races, I assume.
It really is. I got asked by a student friend of mine, and he was like, well, where does our state Senate candidate stand on the Israel and Palestine war? And I'm like, he has no position because the work that he wants to do in the General Assembly has no effect on, you know, foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think getting especially younger people to realize that, you know, your city councils and your school boards and your state legislatures, they're not going to affect foreign policy. So when you vote, leave foreign policy out of your local elections.
Well, now, speaking of local elections, this week we had a special election in Alabama, which is really the state that kicked off the latest round of anti-abortion policies from Republicans when their Supreme Court basically outlawed in vitro fertilization because of the rules that they put in place that would have kept women, families, from being able to plan a family and have a family with IVF. And the Democrat in the special election, she flipped a Republican seat. It was a narrow Republican seat, but this is Alabama. And she won it by a huge margin, like 23 points. When you see something like that in Alabama, does that give you some hope and encouragement for winning a lot of these seats in North Carolina?
It really does. I'm working on a campaign now running against the Republican incumbent that wrote North Carolina's abortion ban. So the main focus of this campaign is women's health care, but making sure that the messaging isn't too pro-choice to where it may scare away the independent votes. But we're taking this messaging as this is government overreach. And if they're going to come after something like this, what's next? And, you know, she did a great job, the candidate in Alabama, really hitting hard, you know, what the Alabama General Assembly has done and what the Alabama Supreme Court did with the IVF rulings.
And, you know, that was a woman who ran. And I think that when you have more women as nominees for candidates, you're going to be able to appeal to people who understand that they take these issues seriously, even if it's not the top of their agenda. Do you see that as a growing trend in North Carolina? North Carolina, in some ways, has done a better job of electing women than here in Pennsylvania over the years. And so do you see that as a strategy or a way for Democrats to succeed even in states like Alabama and North Carolina?
Yeah, because, I mean, here in North Carolina, a lot of our candidates for our Council of State races, which is, you know, Commissioner of Labor, State Treasurer, a majority of them are women. And these are women that come from every walk of life here in North Carolina, from the state legislature to farmers to, you know, people of color. You know, women and young people will sway the elections in swing states. It happened in 2020. It happened in 2022. And it's going to happen again this year.
Now, finally, the podcast is called You Should Run. And you're not running for office now, maybe in a few years, maybe next year even. But you are helping a lot of candidates. You've met people who have run for office. You've talked with folks like Darren, who have had a podcast recently. When you see people who are interested in running, what would be your words of encouragement as a younger voter to encourage anyone of any generation, but especially maybe younger people? Why would you encourage them to run for office at this time in history?
Yes, I mean, we're at a time to where we need a coalition of different thinkers and people that bring different skills. And my words are, you know, do it. You know, there's nothing that's, you know, you can run a good campaign no matter what generation you're from. But, you know, putting your dreams out there, putting your heart into it. And I mean, when I run for the state legislature in 2030, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put my heart into it. I'm going to put my blood, sweat, and tears into it because it's what I need to do to become a better citizen, not only in North Carolina, but as an American citizen.
Well, I appreciate that you're doing it. Democracy is a team sport. It's something you have to participate in. It's not something that you can just be a bystander of, because even if you're just voting, which is not just, you're still participating in it. So it's much more important than any sport that's out there, any activity. Brandon, with all that's been said, you talked about that Democrats are in a super minority in the legislature. You talk about some really far-right candidates Republicans have that can be very scary for voters from the left to the right. It doesn't matter where you are. Some of these candidates are scary. What gives you hope as we head into 2024?
The one thing that gives me hope is I think a lot of people realize that this election is important. And I think there are people willing to put aside partisan politics and their own agenda to further the agenda, not only of their home states, but the future of the entire country. So I feel like this election will be, when it's all said and done, will be an election of unity to help us going forward as a country.
I hope so. I hope it's a step in the right direction. You never know what will happen 2 years from now, 4 years from now, but hopefully this will be the step where we keep pulling people into reality. That's our goal. So thank you so much, Brandon. I really appreciate what you're doing in North Carolina, and I wish you the best of luck to win a lot of these races because they're very, very important.
Thank you so much.
And if you're listening and you're interested, maybe you should run for office too.